Hello guys, so this is Hannah and I am starting this podcast channel to discuss about psychological thriller movies, books, serial killers and much more, but mainly on the true crime and mystery side, because I discovered like 1 or 2 years ago that this is a path that I am really very much passionate about, and being a journalism student, I love mysteries, I love controversies, obviously I love reading them, keeping a journal on them, and so I just figured out what's even the point of having these journals and keeping them if I cannot show it to the world. So I decided, why not just come down here and express myself, my opinions, and share them with a lot of people around the world and kind of get to know their opinions as well. So what better can this be? And so let's just start, I guess. So I'll be starting my podcast with a very controversial topic going on around now. That is the 2021 Netflix movie Deadly Illusions. As the name suggests, yes, the movie is about some psychiatric mental conditions of some pretty normal people that actually drives something really insane and deadly and dangerous at the end. Well, that is exactly what I got when I first noticed the title and the cover picture, and I was immediately taken forward to it. I was like, yes, I'm gonna see it, I'm gonna enjoy it. But okay, I was in there for a ride. I have a mixed feeling about it, but none of my feelings are biased, so I think I would be able to discuss it on a more neutral way, because most of the people are right now at this point are really negative Nancy to this movie. Nothing against them. I mean, yes, they say the movie is ridiculous and horrendous. Couldn't agree more. It is. And also, there are few people here in this world who think that the movie is actually kind of good. So I'm not going to say which people am I belonging from, but I'm just going to discuss it, because to be very honest, at this point, I don't know myself. I'm not really biased on any one of them. I think I'm quite in between. Like, I have a love and hate relationship, which pretty much give me at a neutral position. So yeah, I'm gonna talk about it. I hope you all enjoy it, and please excuse my nervousness, because this is my first time ever doing anything on social media, so I guess I would be like kind of overlooking this nervousness. I know it is really off-putting, but I promise to improve it from the next time. So without any further ado, let's get started with the discussion. So, the movie starts with our two main protagonists, that is Mary and Grace, as we are introduced. Mary seems to be this mother of two children, a very lovable and responsible wife, having their perfect life, like their family looks like they're the perfect, rich, successful family, you know what I mean? Like the family who would be living in upstate New York kind of a family. The children love their parents, no fighting between the married couple. It's just way too perfect. And we know what we say when we see something way too perfect. That it's too good to be true. And yes, that's exactly what it proves to be at the end. Okay, so first, let's discuss about Mary. Mary is this rich, successful writer. She has her book series called Deadly Illusions. That's exactly the name of the movie. I see what they did there. Anyways, so yeah, basically she is the successful writer, but we get to know that she has stopped writing. She has taken a break from her career, and probably her publishers approaches her to write some more books on the same series. That's how the movie starts, and we kind of get this idea that Mary does not actually want to go back to writing, not at least the same series. So basically, that's how the movie starts, and we can feel some tension right off the bat. And this is something that I really liked about the movie, that how the movie was really straight to the point. And even though there was a lot of twist, because that's supposed to happen when it is a psychological thriller movie, but even though there was like a lot of twist and turnings, the movie was having a very tight and a number of cast and crew. Like, the cast was really small, which kept the movie very compact. Like, there was not side characters just flying everywhere and just the story is like just everywhere. It was not like that. It was very compact within a certain amount of people, and it was actually very nice to see a movie that is so compact and not really exaggerated and all over the place. So basically, that's how the movie starts, and right off the bat we sense some tension, like some tension between Mary and her career, which was not that big of a deal, but kind of just starts the setting of the movie, right? So then her husband comes home and gives her the bad news that they have actually lost a lot of money in their business, and so it kind of puts her in a position to actually take her job and write a book, because that book's gonna offer her a lot of money, which they needed to maintain their so perfect rich life, right? So basically she started taking the job, but now there was a problem because she was away from this job and she was this perfect mother, but now that she has to take the job, she has to, like, you know, get some more in the job. So who's gonna look after her kids? So now she has a best friend, Aline. Aline is this woman who is like her best friend. They go to the gym together basically, and probably they are business partners as well. And Aline kind of tells her, advises her to hire a nanny for the kids from a very reputed and kind of posh kind of nanny house. And so she was skeptical. She goes to visit the place, she goes to their office, talk to them, and they said that they would be sending a bunch of people to her house to interview. And there was a series of bad interviews and nothing caught her eye, and she was disappointed, and she calls her husband to just let him know that she would just give up on this nanny thing and she would manage somehow. But that right then and there, like an angel, Grace appears. Grace is this perfect girl, like everything about her is so perfect. Like, she has this student look going on with a sweater and a skirt and a shirt with socks and like a tidy plait, like a braid in her hair with a light blue ribbon. She was like this angel looking kind of an innocent pure girl. And Mary instantly took a liking for her. So also now, after meeting Grace and talking to her, they get to know that Grace is really a reader. She reads a lot, and she, when she gets to know that Mary is an author, she really respects her and loves her. And that was something that was really overwhelming to Mary, and she really liked Grace right off the bat, and she really loved her. The kids, they really, really love Grace. Like, very soon, the Grace and the kids, they become very close. The kids are very comfortable with her. They're happy. The family is more perfect than ever. Well, guess everything is not just so perfect, because even after having this absolute perfect setup for her kids, like having a perfect nanny, having a perfect husband, a perfect life, Mary seems to go through writer's block, which is like very dangerous about like talking about the situation, because now Mary has to be writing something because she needs the money and she needs to give her writing, but she has a writer's block. So how would she do that? Well, she finds her inspiration, rather say her muse, in Grace. She started getting really obsessed with Grace. She started writing again. She got over her writer's block and she started writing about Grace and her story of surrounding her. Grace was, as we can assume, that her main character of her book, the book she was writing. Mary was delusional. She used to hallucinate, and we see her confessing to this in front of her best friend Elaine, and she confessed that whenever she started writing, she couldn't seem to define the fine line between her imagination and her real world, which was really proved to be scary later on. Now there is a question that, okay, she doesn't seem to have any defined line between her imagination and reality. She writes about Grace. She is like, Grace is her muse. But what's wrong in that, Hannah? Well, let me explain what's wrong in that, because many things goes down, like literally. Mary gets so obsessed that she kind of weirdly started getting attracted to Grace, like physically intimate. Like, she used to have this scenes. We see these scenes about of Mary and Grace getting intimate, like little by little. At first, we just see Mary getting obsessed with Grace. She just looks at Grace with such intimacy and such attraction, as if like Grace is like the beautiful goddess she has ever laid her eyes on, that kind of a feeling. But then also we are like, okay, but how is that bad? I mean, maybe she is a bisexual, maybe she likes Grace. Oh, is it a third, like a love triangle kind of a scene, that her husband Tom would be jealous of them or something? Well, no, it seems so simple, but it is not. Because then we see this scene where she actually talks to Elaine about her attraction towards Grace, and Elaine asks her, like, did you ever felt attracted to a girl before? And she says no, because she says that she loves her husband, so why? Yeah, that makes no sense. She has a husband, has 2 kids. She and her husband seem to have a very lovely relationship, so why exactly would she ever get attracted to a girl? And if she even does that, why would it be like so weird for her? Well, that is because she never got attracted to any girls, and it is weird for her because it is like a first time thing. Now basically we just start going through a bunch of these super cute and super heartwarming scenes of Mary and Grace getting closer, like almost like a best friend, a mentor kind of a thing. Mary looked at Grace as if Grace was her guardian, like as if Mary was like, oh Grace, and Grace was like, oh Mary. They were all over the place because Mary seemed to be like very respectful to, like she was really respectful of Grace. She loved Grace. But her love with Grace was a little bit off. She loved Grace as in like a little sister, but as well as in a physical way, right? Because she had these scenes about Grace and she seemed to be really attracted to her. On the other hand, Grace seemed to be really thinking like Mary is like some, like kind of a best friend, elder sister kind of a vibe. Grace, we don't see Grace having any kind of attraction towards Mary in that sense. So now we just think like, okay, what's going on here? Like, who has a feeling for whom and what it is actually? Well, it was so much more than the eye, what makes the eye. Because we just think it would be something, you know, very critical and complicated about relationships. Well, no, it just gets way wild and wild than we would ever think. Well, after all this, we see that Grace is becoming a part of their family. She is almost becoming like a very important part, and they are like, Mary and Grace are like really getting close, and even Tom seemed to have like accepted this fact, and Tom is also like very sweet to Grace. Grace is almost like a little sister to him, and they all just embrace Grace in their family, right? And so one time we just see them, like Mary and Grace, having a fun, like having a little drink and having fun, and suddenly Grace breaks down in Mary's arms and she pleads Mary never to leave her alone, never to throw her out of this embrace of a family that she have got. And Mary becomes very emotional and she hugs Grace and she promises her that she would never let her go. And well, the scene ends in a very erotic kind of a way nonetheless, and it seems to have put Mary off. The next day we see that there is a kind of a play kind of a thing going on in the kids' school, and Mary takes Grace aside in there in the washroom and tells her that Grace, whatever happened, that cannot happen again. And Grace is just like, what happened? So Mary just kind of like, okay, did I just hallucinate that? Maybe, because she knew that when she writes, she starts hallucinating. So she just says that and she lets her go. And so after this, she started having more and more erotic imaginations, or rather hallucinations of Grace and her. And she have these intimate moments that at the moment seem like she enjoys a lot, but then it literally throws her off. So it is very confusing at that point that, okay, so if Mary hallucinating, then okay, Mary is hallucinating because she's writing a book or she is attracted to Grace, right? But no, it is not that easy. Turns out it is a lot more complicated than this. Well, then Mary started writing, like she started full-fledgedly writing. She wouldn't come out of her office, just keep on writing a lot. And among these times, Grace basically took on like a full-time job to take care of the kids and kind of accompany Tom when he goes to office and stuff like that. And during this time, we see a different phase of Grace. We see that Grace have been kind of seducing Tom when they were alone. After they put the kids in the school, they were alone having breakfast, and there we can see that Grace is kind of trying to seduce Tom. And now we have this idea that, okay, maybe it's like Grace being very too friendly to Mary because she wanted to have a scene with Tom so that Mary won't, you know, kind of doubt her, maybe because of that. Well, Tom does actually agrees, and he says that, okay, you are showing me a very different way side of you today, Grace. Like, I didn't knew you had this side, and that's that. Tom really didn't seem to be way too into her, but he seemed to be kind of concerned, to be very specific, because he was like, okay, what's going on with Grace? That kind of a sense, right? So after all this, they kind of like, there is this whole scene where Aline sees Tom and Grace together, and she kind of doubts Grace of seducing and trying to steal Tom away. So she goes to Mary to warn her, and Mary is basically like, okay, Aline, she basically puts up Aline and kind of gives the blame on her, that maybe Aline is trying to seduce her husband, and that's the reason why she is just putting off the blame on Grace, because Grace is a new girl and Mary is supposed to disbelieve Grace and trust Aline. But the opposite happens, and Aline is really broken and she just goes off. But before going, she says that no matter what happens, just remember I'll be there for you, to Mary, right? And Aline just leaves, and Mary is just kind of off about it, and she's like, okay, whatever. So now we see the scene of Mary and Grace making dinner, where Grace kind of goes down on Mary, and Mary is just like, okay, Grace, don't do this, they will come home and stuff, right? So here at this point, we almost see that Grace is like down Mary, and Mary is like, she is opposing it, but not strong enough, like she is not opposing it hard enough. It's almost like one part of her really wants that, but the other part is like, okay, no, you have a husband and a kid, so you cannot do that, right? So eventually Tom and the kids return home from their little evening walk, and Mary just says that she's not feeling well and goes to take a little nap before dinner, and Grace just keeps on making dinner. Within like this sleepy thing, she suddenly wakes up and hears some moaning. So she follows it and she sees that Grace is sitting on the kitchen counter and Tom is blindfolded going down on Grace, and Grace is surprisingly dominant, and she just thinks to herself like, okay, what's going on? She's shocked, and she just sees that Grace just looked back at her, even though she was just in a corner looking at them hiding, but Grace looks at her straight and she just kind of faints. And after that, when she wake up, we see her lying on her bed as if she never woke up from the nap in the first place. She comes down to dinner and she very rudely, verbally accuses Grace of seducing her husband and stealing him from her. And Grace is just like thrown off. She's like, what? What did I do? And the kids get scared and the kids says that, Dad, why is Mom acting like this? So Mary just kind of controls herself. She cries out loud and she says the kids that when Mommy writes, she cannot define the difference between the reality and an imagination, and she kind of asks for forgiveness from the kids and they have normal dinner. This next day, she actually asks for forgiveness from Grace, but Grace seemed to be surprisingly understandable about this whole situation, and she's like, no, it's fine, I do understand. Which I was like, okay, how do you even understand that? Like, you're not a writer or something. That's not something that every writer has, that it is common for having an author having these delusions. But okay, Grace, if you say so, you're such a good girl, you know, that kind of a vibe. So later that day, Mary calls the nanny center and asks them for the check that she sent, like, why isn't that still allowed and stuff, and they say that, okay, ma'am, there's like some kind of error. And so they eventually ask her, like, what was the nanny's name? So Mary tell them that it's Grace, and they're like, Grace, but we don't have anyone named Grace. So she just gets really shocked, but just remember, Grace still doesn't know that Mary knows that Grace is not from that center. So she is just like, hey, like acting normally as she would do, like a sweet innocent girl, right? So Mary basically goes straight to Aline and she is like, Aline, I need to ask you something. And when she enters Aline's office, she sees that Aline is facing towards the wall and her chair, like her back, is facing the door. So when she enters, she basically cannot see Aline. She sees the chair. So she just goes up to the chair, like continuously talking. She's like, oh my God, what should I do? You know, I just got to find out this and that. And she just turns around the chair and there she sees Aline sitting dead with a huge large knife stabbed at her throat, and she just panics. She calls 911. The police arrive, and right off the bat, the first suspect is like Mary. Surprising, yes, but not so much, because the police have a full-on video of a lady wearing the same clothes as Mary was wearing right then, getting inside Aline's office, going inside Aline's office and then coming out after a few minutes. But the only difference was the person who went in was wearing a scarf and gloves, and Mary was not wearing that, right? So Mary just keeps on saying that that's not me, but the police is not ready to hear. Her husband Tom comes in with a lawyer, and the lawyer and the police talk, and while Tom and Mary just sits outside, and Tom is like really, really stressed about Mary's condition, and he's like, yeah, I don't know what's going on, I think we'll figure it out. But Mary just keeps on telling him that, you do know that I haven't done that, right? And Tom just kind of seems off, and he's like, yeah, you didn't do that, I know. It's like, seems like more of a moral support from her rather than believing her. So she just tells Tom that I am gonna go to the washroom, and just leaves. She leaves the police station, she sits in a car, and she drives all the way to like 2 hours drive to Grace's aunt's house. There, when she enters, she meets this very warm old woman who is basically supposed to be Grace's aunt. She tells Mary to just come in and sit, because Mary wanted to talk about Grace, right? And from the next room, she hears a guy screaming, like, in a very drunk and abused way to the aunt and saying some words like, okay, why is she here? Why does she, wants to know about Grace and stuff, right? So basically, eventually, the aunt comes in and she just sits there to talk. And basically, here, Mary thinks that, okay, they're a couple. They're an old couple, right? The aunt and the uncle. But suddenly, she sees that a very diseased looking dog just limps its way into the kitchen, and suddenly the aunt has this change of voice, and it's like a very heavy drunk man voice, and she just kind of kicks the dog like that, and Mary just kind of gets shocked by it, and she's like, okay, what should I do now? And the next moment, the aunt is like all warm and good lady again. She gets the dog some food and kind of pets the dog and talk about Grace like normal. So here we get to know that Grace was one of the eldest siblings among 8 other children that her parents had. Her parents couldn't feed all of them, so they were having an extremely rough childhood. And after that, when the parents died, like, apparently all the kids have been scattered, and Grace was under their surveillance. They got Grace and they took care of Grace, and the last time they heard from her was when she was having a job in the city that Mary lives in, right? So basically, here we get to know that there is some problem going on with Grace as well. Like, Grace is not as innocent as clear as we think, right? So Mary kind of just, while she returns home, she calls Tom. And she's like, okay, don't let Grace in. She is a bad news. Don't let her in. But Tom, as we see, is in the shower, and he doesn't really get the message. So now we see Grace wearing a very seductive black lingerie, and with a knife, she stands in front of the shower and talks to Tom. And she's like, yes, Tom. Like, she's talking in a very seductive, dominant way, and Tom is just kind of off about this whole thing, and he's like, okay, Grace, just back off, don't do this and stuff. But she just stabs and slices Tom's whole chest and stomach in a very clumsy way, but apparently just Tom kind of also fights back a little, but gets saved by Mary, because Mary just rings the bell right at that moment. Grace runs away from the shower. She dresses up like she is normally do, like a good girl. She runs to Mary and she is like, okay, I don't know what happened. So Mary just runs to the washroom and she sees Tom all bloodied up in the shower, right? And so Grace just comes in and starts wiping the floor, like the blood on the floor, like a very terrified little girl, as if she really didn't know what happened. So Mary is just like, Grace, who did this? And Grace is like, first she says that, I don't know, but then she gives up and she says that, I tried to stop her, I really did. And she breaks down, and Mary is just like, she don't have any idea about what's going on. But then we suddenly see Grace, like, just being this rude, arrogant, bold girl who kind of attacks Mary, and they have like a hustle, a little fight, and then eventually at last, Mary hits Grace's head with a flower vase and she becomes unconscious, right? And in the last scene of the movie, we just see that 1 year later, we see that Mary, her 2 kids, and her husband is very happy. They're having this really happy life, and Mary just kind of goes to Eileen's grave and deposits a new manuscript, I guess, and deposits that, gives some flower, and then she walks to a mental asylum where, like, the receptionist asks her, writing something new, and she just says them that, no, working on something different this time. And then we see her going into Grace's room, where Grace is literally playing like a little girl, and At the last scene, we just left all the audience really, really confused. That is, we see a lady come out of the psychiatric ward just the way that Grace came out after she murdered Elaine. So that was the whole story of the movie. Now, basically, I would just break down a few things going on in this movie to make the movie more explainable, right? Because I just basically said the story of the movie in an easier way. But I think I owe all of my audience a little explanation, a little more explanation about everything that goes on, right? So, basically, first, Mary. Let's start with Mary. What's wrong with Mary? Mary has this delusional things that comes up whenever she starts writing. She has this mental health which makes her hallucinate things that she writes in her books. And because Grace was her muse, her inspiration to write the book, she basically imagines everything and hallucinates everything around Grace. And because Grace stays in their family, that reality, that imagination basically affects her and her family in real life, because she basically hallucinates Grace doing this stuff to her family, which is really, really harsh on her and her family to take. Now, Tom is like a perfect husband. He is actually perfectly fine, and he's the only sane person in this movie apart from Elaine. He is actually sane and he has no problem. He was just a normal guy. Now, Elaine was really a best friend of Mary. She was a sane person. She was really helpful to Mary. She cared about her and she was a really lovely friend. And probably that's why she had lost her life. Okay, just kidding. Next, Grace. There is a lot wrong with Grace. Basically, Grace had schizophrenia or split personality disorder that we know about, right? So her second personality was Margaret. Margaret came up as an hereditary disease for Grace, because we see her aunt having the same disease, because her aunt possessed the characteristics of an aunt and her uncle, who was probably very abusive. So we can assume that Grace had this as an hereditary way. And because she was born and brought up in such a rough condition, because, you know, her family couldn't feed her, so probably the condition there was very rough. And also, like, her aunt's situation doesn't seem a lot friendlier. So she had this next personality inside her, that was Margaret, who was like her best friend, because Grace was, in real life, Grace was a very kind, very timid kind of a girl, a very innocent, soft girl. And her partner, Margaret, like the soul inside her, the second personality, rather, Margaret was like an outgoing, very strong, bold girl, who is basically a best friend of Grace who would stand up for everything, right? We all have that one friend who is just not scared of anything or anyone and would stand for what is right, or rather just stand for us, right? Like, no matter what we did, they would be by our side and be like, yes, they did nothing wrong, yes, talk to me, fight me, with like that kind of a thing, right? So yeah, Margaret was that kind of a friend for Grace. And Margaret was really possessive about her friendship with Grace. As in a personality, she helped Grace live through her childhood and all through her teenage lives until she came in this job. Now, in this job, when Grace meets Mary and Tom and their family, she is taken like a little sister in their family. She is loved, she is cared, and through all this, Margaret feels threatened. Margaret feels like they might snatch away Grace and Grace might not need her anymore. Therefore, like, the personality of Margaret won't be alive in Grace anymore, because, you know, there, for a change, Grace is having a good situation. So why would she need someone like, you know, a strong personality? She doesn't need it, because she has love, care, affection in her life now. So Margaret again, like, kind of goes over Grace. She takes over Grace and creates this certain situations which would sabotage the relationship of Grace with Mary. And firstly, that big thing was sabotaging by killing Aline. She killed Aline wearing Mary's dresses because she knew that Mary would be accused of this, and Mary would know that was something that Grace do. So there would be a huge problem, there would be an issue, and Grace would no longer be this lovable, like she won't have this lovable family. And Margaret was nonetheless very much successful in her plan, because it did create a literal huge havoc. And also Margaret kind of wanted to snatch away all the close persons to Mary, because she hated Mary. She hated Mary more than anything, because Mary was the person who was, you know, taking Grace in her embrace and being a best friend to her. And Margaret felt very much threatened by Mary. So she didn't want to kill Mary directly. She wanted to kill her slowly by taking away all the precious people around her, right? So that's why she killed Aline. The next target was Tom, but fortunately Mary saved Tom. And then in the last scene, we see that Mary went into Grace's room, but we see that there was a lady came out in the exact uniform, like wearing the exact same thing, like the scarf and gloves as an extra, and which kind of indicates that, okay, that might not be Mary, that might be Grace. Because let's be honest, when you went in, you were like not wearing any gloves or scarf when Mary went in, right? So why would she actually wear a scarf and a glove when she comes out? That makes no sense. So basically, and also that was the exact way Grace hid her identity when she killed Aline. So basically we can only assume that finally maybe Margaret has killed Mary and just went out to lead her perfectly free life with Grace as her best friend. Now there is a lot of question that whatever the intimate scenes are that are shown is like very detailed and feels very real. So is it like somehow possible that Margaret was initiating these things or provoking these things? Because that's how the scenes are presented, right? We see that Grace have been provoking this intimacy, like this intimate scenes with Mary later on. But no, the thing is Mary gets attracted to Grace because Grace was her muse to write this book. And as we all know, she just don't know the difference between reality and imagination when she writes. So she basically gets attracted to Grace in that sense. But and that sense of intimacy and attraction leads on Mary to hallucinate all the provocative intimate scenes. Grace never actually did anything like that in real life to Mary, because Grace won't do that, firstly. Secondly, Margaret will have no reason to do that. Margaret would rather love to poison Mary and kill her. Why would she want to, you know, make Grace bond with Mary? Because apparently even if it's Margaret, the body is Grace's. So basically we see Mary imagining Grace, she is not imagining Margaret. So why would Margaret ever want Grace to be more close than with Mary? Because she wants the exact opposite. So that whole thing was technically in Mary's mind. Mary was the one thinking about all these intimate scenes, while Margaret was the one who was planning this whole murders and stuff to make Grace and Mary separate, to actually kill Mary slowly and eventually. Probably she did that as the last scene, suppose. And that's the end of the whole movie and the explanation, I guess. Well, I do understand this is not the perfect podcast you guys expected. I am pretty sure none of my listeners, whoever would be listening to this, the first thing they would think that, oh my god, this is trash. I know that very well, and I'm extremely sorry about that. I am really new to this whole thing. I don't know what I'm doing. I just, to be very honest, I'm very, very honest right now, and I am in this whole true crime psychological thriller kind of a thing for a long time, like for 1 or 2 years now, and I'm very passionate about it. I do my extensive thorough research on every topic related to this, and It just seems kind of a waste to just, search about these things and just call my best friend in the middle of the night and talk to him about all this, because he is kind of not into psychological thrillers or serial killers. He kind of gets freaked out by this, and so he is basically like, okay, like that, right? And so, yeah, it didn't seem fair, and I really wanted to share these things with people who are in this community, who loves true crime and can be like somewhat have a discussion. Maybe it can be on the same topic, like on the same way that I think. Maybe it can be for the topic I speak, or maybe against the way I speak, but there would be a conversation, right? You guys can actually just listen to it and be like, okay, you can think about it, and that's what I want. And I know I have been stammering a lot in between this. I have been pausing a lot, and that's just because I'm extremely nervous to even talk. I know it's not that big of a deal because I'm not giving a live performance, but here's the thing. I'm a good speaker. Trust me. I know. Listening to this whole thing, it doesn't seem like that, but that's the truth. I am a good speaker, but this is the thing that knowing that this whole thing would be heard by people like all over the world, probably, who don't even know me, like I don't even know them, how they would judge, that kind of a thing just giving me a bit of an anxiety. And that had been always the case, but you know what, your girl can be stopped by that. You gotta do what you gotta do, right? And if I want to do this, I'm gonna do this, and the least I'm asking is just for a little bit of support. And I guess I hope that I can get that support from anyone that is listening to me. Any constructive criticism, anything would be very, very good for me. And I would appreciate it. And thank you. I hope all of you enjoy it. And so that was about this movie. I don't really like this movie or hate this movie. I am somewhere in the between. And I think it is actually like some work of it is done very well. But the whole sexy psychological thriller thing is very 90s or 80s kind of a theme, which I like coming back now because, the children of our generation, they don't really bother to see movies from 90s or 80s. So it's good to bring back some concepts from them. And yes, some of it was used in a very ridiculous way. It could have been better. But, well, guess what? I'm no movie critic or director, so I'm not going to criticize it. But I'm just going to give my honest opinion about how I thought the movie was and what was the movie's plot. And that's what I did. And I'll see you guys next time with something different. Maybe not a movie. I will probably talk about a serial killer or a murder case. I don't know. I haven't thought about it. Let's see how good of a response this one gets. And, yeah, I'll see you guys next time. Bye-bye and good night or good morning, according to which place you're in, boo. Because it's literally 2:30 at night when I am shooting this, so yeah. Okay, so bye-bye and see you in the next time. Bye, guys.